Hey, what's up, cuz?
Welcome to another episode of Learn Something. And today's special guest is my cousin, Friday Michael, local St. Louis artist.
What's up, everybody?
Presenting to some and introducing to others, I should say. Now, this is informal, by the way. Originally, I was just trying to make sure that the invite friends part on my podcast worked, and I was trying to see how it worked. So instead of having to have a guest face to face due to COVID restrictions, we're having a guest anchor to anchor.
Anchor to anchor. Now, does this have video capability?
Unfortunately, not. It's all just voice.
It's just all voice. Okay.
And I need to turn my engine off because this microphone picks up everything.
Now you can record. It does record though, correct?
We're recording right now. When you invite, it doesn't start recording until you join in.
Oh, okay. You know what? And see it too. I see it.
It's because it should be showing you the clock also.
Yep. Oh,
and actually, oh man, this app is beautiful because if you really do pay attention and get into it, you can actually learn production and editing strictly off this app.
Okay.
I mean, it has parts where places where you can flag and come in and insert things if you want. Me personally, I've just been doing it just kind of rogue pirate style, like getting footage and dropping shows. I have a couple of interviews in store that I haven't attached to publish yet. Ready to publish, I just haven't published it yet. But to get a little background info for the people who don't know, can you just tell the people a little bit about yourself? I don't mind
at all, man. Where to start? It's hard to say a little bit about me because I've been on this earth 48 plus years. But
I don't mean to interrupt. Let's go. Since we're going to be focusing partially or mainly right now on your musical
career.
All right,
there we go.
Let's start with your musical beginnings.
Well, my musical beginnings started with my aunt Lovey Hill, your mom, who used to take me to this church right off Dr. Martin Luther King when I was 13 years old. And she taught me how to play for pastors and how to teach choirs. So I started learning that at the age of 13. And it was the school of hard knocks because when I wouldn't listen, my auntie would smack me upside the head. So I learned how to listen without getting hurt. And I learned how to teach without getting hit as well. So it seemed to be the narrative growing up in where we grew up. You learn by force, and it was sort of like resistance to pain was the more you could get. That's how we grasp information.
One thing I want to ask you, in reference to playing the piano, because I too was taking lessons at an early age.
And hey, I never knew that.
What I want to find out from you is, when did you actually get comfortable not looking at the keys, not having to hunt and peck?
Actually, that happened early on because we both took lessons from a lady named Dr. Evelyn Morgan. She taught your mom, and she also taught me from the age of 7. That's where I took piano lessons, and we starting around the 4th or 5th year. That's when she would take a notebook or some type of obstruction and place it over my hands and have me read music. So I couldn't actually see the notes. I just had to always look for it. So, yeah. Wow. So that's how she trained me to not look at what I'm doing and just get familiar with the keys and familiar with fingering and familiar with the weight of the keys and the size of the keys. So, yeah, that started at a young age. She started doing that at around, like I said, the fourth or fifth year. So that was about 11 years old. And that's when I started looking.
Because of that, a lot of people who can't play the piano, but they like to hear the piano or hear different musical instruments. The one thing that a lot of people say is, how do you get comfortable with not looking, not, you know, like the hand-eye coordination, like with the drummer? Right. Like, you know, a lot of people don't know that isn't the piano a percussion instrument?
No, it's a percussion. Well, it's a dual percussion and strings. So, yeah,
that's what I meant, strings. I'm sorry.
But it's more of a stringed instrument than it's percussion. Because if you look in the interior of the piano, you see the hammers hitting the string. So it is percussion.
Right.
And depending on how some people play, it determines the loudness and the softness of how the hammer hits that string. So, and the pedals have a determination on how the sound comes out as well. So there's three pedals on the piano. One is for loudness, one is for damper, and one is for sustain. So that also determines how you hit. So,
I never knew that. I've always seen the pedals and never knew that they had what their functions were. You know what I'm saying? Unless you actually are someone like yourself who actually has gone deep into playing, people don't know.
Yeah,
and you have people like myself who are musically inclined, but you just don't. If it's something that you don't know about, you know, you just wonder like, what is that function? What is it?
and that's from right to left. So the right piano's loudness, the one in the middle is for to damper the sound, and the one on the far left is for softness. So yeah, man, it's a whole gambit of information that can be learned through this podcast, that can be learned from the piano. It is the, if you ask me, it is the main instrument in all of I don't want to say orchestra, because it's bigger than that. If you can play, I'll just say it this way: if you can play the piano, you can pick up any instrument and play it, whether it's a horn, whether it's in the percussion, whether it's strings, whether it's guitars, strings, bass, oboes, all that. You'll be able to play any instrument just from the piano. So it is the base of all instrumentation.
That's what my next question was leading towards. Once you said that, it was very intriguing, because like just knowing, like you said, the different instruments that are in an orchestra or slash symphony, what have you. Since we were trying to find the correct word, but knowing, like you said, the piano is the basis of everything.
Yep.
So it's almost like is that because it holds the melody? Why would you say that the piano is the basic, like the foundation, or per se, instead of say the baseline? Instead of the baseline.
A lot of people think
the baseline is where you start. So why would you say like the piano?
The piano, because when you look at it, a standard piano has 88 keys. No other instrument has that much activity. If you look at a guitar, the most strings you see on a guitar is I think I've seen a 5-string bass, but normally you don't have more than 6 strings. Now, of course, your frets, which is the little grooves within the guitar, can vary your sound, but you're only dealing with 6 strings. The piano has 88 keys, which ranges from, you know, you can have a bass section treble, and you can have a middle section, all on the same instrument. If you look at your horn has, you can vary your sound by your mouth, but it's called your armature. But the valves, you only got three valves. A saxophone, you have, I think, 20. So you see what I'm saying? You have 88 keys to deal with the piano. So you have more activity or more to work with. And you can vary it with other instruments with what you need to work with and you know, depending on what kind of sound you want to create. But you have a whole variation to work with just with 88. Just think about how many, if you do the math, and I don't want to work on doing the math right now, but 88 keys to work with, chording and music theory and all that, you have a whole, it's just so much. So it has to be the foundation because you have, everything is built off of that 88 key structure. And that's my personal, some other musicians may say differently, but all the musicians I know that can play multiple instruments, they started with the piano. Myself, I started with the piano. I picked up a guitar for the first time and I was able to play it. You know what I'm saying? never took a lesson at all. I was able to play it. Same way with the drums, you know, being able to get how you want your beat to go for a song. You can determine what type of sound you want as far as your bass and as far as your snare and your cymbals, depending on the rhythm that you determine with your song that you're playing. So all instruments, the foundation of that is the piano.
That's great that you broke that down like that, because like I said, a lot of times, you know, from the outside looking in, you may be someone like myself who is musically inclined, but when you be able to dig deeper into it and learn way more than just what's on the surface or just right up under the surface, that's a completely different level of learning music. That's mastering music. That's, you know, a music ministry per se. You know, that's really, really learning music. Before we go any further, I do want to give a big shout out to our sponsor, to my Sauce St. Louis, Hottest Chicken, Fish and Shrimp Restaurant in St. Louis, 5249 Del Mar, St. Louis, Missouri, 63108.
There it is. Number
314-448-6260. Please call ahead 20 minutes or food is cooked to order.
There it is.
Now, getting back to our
I want to add to that, because I listen to a lot of producers and musicians and a lot of jazz artists, because that's generally where you get your most of your instrumentation. And one of my favorites is Quincy Jones. And looking at his career and so much that he's done, man, he used to work and do the he was the lead band member for what's old boy name? Frank Sinatra. Yeah, he was the band. He led the band for Frank Sinatra. And when I watched his documentary, they were talking to him about all the instrumentation that he knows, and it was so funny because they were doing a break in the questioning, and they just left the camera running, and he walked off and went straight to a piano and just started playing it. So like, if Quincy Jones, you know what I'm saying, knows that that's the basis, then that's enough for me.
Yeah, right. A lot of African Americans identify with that with Quincy just on the strength of him making a theme song for Sanford and Son.
I know, yeah. Oh, so many theme songs.
Some people don't know that. Some people do, you know. Yeah. It's just musically, this man is just, when you think about all the music that he has done.
My gosh.
Just think about all the music he's seen that didn't come to light. Just the thing that didn't even get produced. It's like, damn.
This thing is produced. This is cold, and this didn't get produced.
Right. You know, Quincy, when you're dealing with
someone
like that.
Yeah, he's just at another. Him, George Benson, those guys. They had another level. And even, you know, some other artists too. Brian McKnight is very, he's not at the Quincy level, but that dude is cold too.
That was sort of my next question to you. It was a twofold question, since I know that you actually are an artist also, and I know that you actually know the production side.
Right. Right.
Producer-wise, we already know Quincy Jones. Name a couple of other producers that influenced you, and also singer/songwriter/producer types, like you say, like Brian McKnight, that may have influenced you.
Yeah, Brian McKnight was one. I already mentioned Quincy. Those two generally. And I had a lot of my own ideas personally that I wanted to create, that were in my head and I wanted to create in the studio from the songs that I wrote, and a lot of that came from myself, but I did have some of their influences on my music. Fred Hammond is another one. He was a big influence, and this may come as a surprise to you, but Chop Squad DJ, my little brother, he's so talented, man. That dude, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't even have started the first project. And he's meant for him to be so young. So it's just amazing me how much he knew, and it's so much what he's taught me now, even about how the music has changed and it has become more digital than more of the manual, which is what I'm used to. And he's taught me a lot with that. And he still managed to maintain what he knows as far as the manual portion of it, and he's translated that to the digital. Man, he's extremely talented, man. That dude, yeah.
Let's touch on that relationship with Daryl for a minute. If you can, go back to your origins with Daryl and your origins with him musically. That's what you may have shown him as you being the older brother.
Right. Now, see, we started in church, and that's where he started. And that's where he kind of blossomed. I remember, because I never really gave him a lesson. He would ask me a question when he was growing up, when he was younger. He'd ask me a question, and I would just show him something, and he would just take it and just explode from it exponentially. He just take it to another level. And it's funny because I would show him, he's like, Rob, hey, show me this chord or show me this pattern, and when I play something on the piano, he's like, oh, that was dope. And then like a week later, he's like, man, look at this. And I'm like, dang, dude, that's not what I showed you.
So that's how he learned how to play the piano?
Yeah, man. Yeah. All on his own. I would just show him a little something, and Daryl would take it on his own, and like I said, it would just exponentially just blossom from all his creativity, something that was inside of him. Some people just got it, man. That dude just got it.
Right. Child prodigy.
Yeah, and he would say, sometimes he would say to me, man, I appreciate everything you showed me, and I would say to myself, dude, I really didn't show you a lot. You just took some of the basic stuff I did present to you and then just take it to another level. This is when we started working on the first album. It's funny because we had a whole lot of ideas that we just kind of just threw out there. And the guy that we worked with was someone that he introduced me to that he worked with at a studio downtown with Nelly. So the producer that worked with me used to work with Nelly, and DJ hooked me up with him. So we threw out a lot of ideas, and even then, man, back when he was 16, 17, he had like thousands of songs. So when we started working on the album, he was like, hey, man, what you think about this? Hey, what you think about this? And I didn't like nothing that he did. It was only two songs out of the probably hundreds that we listened to that I really liked, and they on the album. And and he just took that from that, man. It's going back, that relationship that we built, because we was in the studio hours and hours. We go to the studio like at 8 o'clock and wouldn't get back till like 3 a.m. And he had to go up, and he had to go to school the next morning, so me, I had to go to work.
That's one thing
side of it. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
one thing that I had experienced with myself, we having some friends that were in the rap game, and on both sides as far as rapping and producing, that's one thing I want you to touch on, because people don't really they hear the jokes and all the stereotypical things about at the studio. They don't really know, man, what it's like to sit there and listen to this beat. Oh no, I don't like that. They're throwing something else. Listen to this for a few times. Nah. Listen to this.
Man,
you know what I'm saying? That process is tedious.
These cats don't know, bro. And I'm glad you touched on that. Like the first, and I don't want to say I'm a seasoned veteran, but I do know how to manage my time a lot better when I go to the studio. I would say, hey, look, this is what I'm going to work on. This is what I want to complete. And I move towards that direction. But before I got to that point, dude, going to the studio is, and this, I lost a lot of artists this way. I would have people come, hey, I want you to come and drop this track for me. And I'd have to tell them, look, you have this much time set out, because it's going to take some time, because you got to redub it. You got to sing it again. If you off, you got to do it again. You know, everything has to be right when you go to the studio, because
it
also depends on the producer that you're working with and the artist that you're working with. A lot of people don't know what music, how to listen to music, and how to listen to what is actually being played as opposed to what you're recording. It's a big difference, because what you're recording may sound good to you, but when you listen to it back and you're like, oh, that sound good, you're like, no, it don't. so right. It's a lot of fine tuning and a lot of precision that needs to take place when you're recording a song. And to do a whole album in itself, dude, that is work. That is some serious work.
Now, with me knowing you since basically my whole life, right. And I know, for people who don't know, this man started out more on the instrumental side. When did you progress toward, I want to sing now?
and that morphed into availability. Like I said, I had artists that I was writing songs for, that I wanted to sing on the track, but they couldn't commit to the amount of time that it took, you know, to sing do the song correctly, and how much time it takes beyond your first studio visit. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like we go Tuesday, you cut the track, and then, hey, I heard something, I need you to come back next Tuesday. People couldn't commit to that. You know what I'm saying? So,
right. They think you know, I'm going to drop my single next week.
No. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Nothing like that at all.
No, nothing like that at all. Man, it takes time. You got to get, it's got to be a commitment. So I got to the point where I was like, dang, you know what? I'm just going to do it myself. So I started writing songs that could fit my voice, you know, and that's why most of everything I do, people will say, oh, you sounded good, oh, you can sing. I disagree with that. I'm like, no, I'm able to create songs that I can sound good at. You know, I can't sing everything. That's the difference.
See, and that's, I'm not going to say that's, I was going there. What I mean is,
No, I'm just saying that's
what I mean is, you know, you weren't known for singing. He was known, for anyone who doesn't know, he was known for being a virtuoso on the piano, not just a piano player. That's why I was wondering, like, when did you decide to, like, you know, I want to go ahead and do the artist part now.
Yep. And that's what happened, because I wasn't able to get artists that could do the amount of music that I needed for a specific song that I wrote. So I said, you know what? Since I'm already in here and I wanted this project to progress, I'm just going to do this my way. And that's where I went. Now, since I have two albums out, I've got, COVID has kind of halted everything, but I got three artists right now that have seen it, and they're like, yeah, I'm ready to make that commitment now. I'm ready to get into the studio and do what's necessary for the music that I got and the music that you have for me. So yeah, it's a learning process. You know, it's of course, there's some bridges that that needed to be crossed, and it's a lot of pitfalls, man. It's a journey. I'll put it that way. It's a journey. The journey. And that's one thing the DJ told me. He's like, look, man, if you're going to do this, you got to keep grinding. I'm like, you're right, bro.
That's one thing. Keep grinding. That's one thing that I tell people that I, when I talk about DJ, that I'm so proud of him about, is the fact that, you know, I spend a lot of time on Facebook. I have social media pages, but mostly I'm on Facebook. And it's been that way for years. And DJ has chronicled everything, his rise from, like he said, from driving a black, yeah, from driving in a black Charger to now with diamond encrusted watches. But
yeah, the Rolexes.
It's been so many times, you know, that you can attest to yourself, when it's like 3:12 in the morning and he's up live in the studio
doing it.
You know what I'm saying? Yep. And this was before he was Chop Squad DJ. This is what,
yeah,
you know, he's
been doing it.
He was always showing people the grind that you got to be on.
Yeah, I admire him for that, because I remember those days. I used to, there was a studio up in North County. I used to take him there like at 10 a.m. I'm like, yo, dude, when you want me to swing back down? He's like, oh, don't worry about it. And when I talked to him the next day, he's like, yo, man, I just got back. So I knew that he was grinding. This is way before he got the deal. Yeah, he was doing it from 10 a.m. to morning. And that's what it takes, man. That's what it takes. A lot of artists, especially in this area, they haven't grasped that yet. And to be honest with you, I really don't work as hard as I need to. And a lot of that is because of, other responsibilities. And when you get into in between albums, you want to get your ideas together. And that's part of what I'm doing right now as well. But yeah, man, it's a grind, dude.
Now to change the subject a little bit, but to correlate it to something we both can relate to, we're both huge basketball fans.
Oh, yeah.
And with me being a with me being a coach, I will always tell my players, if you really want to go to the next level, no matter what it is, NAIA, D2, D1, and with you yourself playing college ball, you can attest to this also. I should tell them, your high school experience can't be like the regular high school student. You got to live, and drink basketball if you really are trying to go to the next level. And that's just college.
It's got to be everything.
You can't have the same, the regular high school life like everybody else. Because I try to tell guys, a bench player on a D2 team will come in here and work you out.
Yeah.
You keep thinking on a D3 team, he will come in here and give you the business. I'm like, yo, you keep thinking that it's sweet if you want to. These guys, boy, living. They don't.
Yes. They will work you. And you mentioned it.
A bench player at a D3 school is the same as like one of the top players in your local city.
Yeah.
What I'm saying? Yeah. So if you're not that nice,
you're in for a rude awakening.
You know what I'm saying? You are in for a very rude awakening. And like I tell them, you're not used to a coach coming to you and telling you you're not strong enough yet, you're not good enough yet, or this guy here is just as good as you. Prove to me that you're better than him. A lot of guys haven't been put in that situation.
So, yeah, and one thing that I learned early on, which kind of deterred me from really pursuing basketball, was that a lot of the toughness that you need to have on you has nothing to do with the actual athleticism that you have. And then what I mean by that is this: I was quick, I was fast, I was one of the fastest on the team of MoBat. Our coach did this drill with me, and I had no idea about it. We was on the baseline. I didn't even know this. He told the big men, y'all wait before y'all start. He rolled the ball. He's like, first one get that ball, get a prize. So he rolled the ball towards half court. And I'm sprinting from the baseline. I get there first. All the big men came and jumped on top of me. Had nothing to do with basketball. You know what I'm saying? Had nothing to do with basketball. And then I came back. I was like, Coach, what's that? He's like, are you tough? This is how it's going to be when you're going in the lane. This is how it's going to be when you're going up against these 7-footers trying to block your shot. You're trying to go to the hole. Are you tough? Can you handle that? And I'm like, dang. You know, you know what I'm saying?
Not as tough as I thought I was.
Right now, I got to sit out of practice because of this drill you just did. So I don't know.
Damn, wow. What's Coach's name?
What's our coach name? Oh. You asked me to go back 30 years.
The coach I didn't like. How about that?
The coach I... Dang.
It's all good. It's just me. We're older guys.
It's going to come back. It's going to come back to me.
Yeah, that's a wild. Dang,
what's the coach's name? I want to say coach. Because he also coached football at Vashon. Oh, man.
I
want to say Watkins.
That's a real old school method.
Yeah, I know.
Just,
how tough are
just
you?
Like, just like to bring it back. I'm really intrigued about, like you said, when she covered your hands so you couldn't see the key. That to me, it brings me back to. It kind of makes me think about the guy who was teaching the dance moves on the 5 Heartbeats, the old guy.
Oh yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Because I really do treasure old school methods as long as they're not killing someone. But old school methods are tried and true. You know what I'm saying? They work. You know, a lot of people don't know about the high ankle sprain. A big ass bucket full of ice, or fill that bathtub full of ice and just sit there.
Full of ice and sit in there,
man.
Does wonders.
Vine turned his ankle during the tournament and wanted to play. Man, you should have seen it. You already know. Just sitting there. But when you want to play, though, you're going to do whatever to get on.
Yeah, you're going to do whatever it takes.
Which is, go ahead.
That's the antidote. Well, the recipe necessary for success. It's not just talent. You have to take your talent to the next level, and that is determined by what's inside your heart, what's inside your gut. Because I don't know if you knew this, but I went to a tryout for the Rockford Lightning back in '97, and man, it was a humbling experience. It was one weekend. I made it to the last cut. And my boy that I went with, he actually made it to the practice. It was, we were actually on the practice team.
Okay.
He made it to the practice team. And Howard Isley was on that squad. Isley got drafted by Utah. Yeah. Howard Isley was on that squad. Jesse Hall was on that squad. Jesse Hall went to Venice. Michigan. Yeah. It was some guys that could ball. Jay, what's the dude? Went to Indiana. I'm gonna say Jay Brown, Jay something.
Unfortunately, all these guys are at no position. I'm listening every year you say it. I'm like, Howard Isley, shooting guard, point guard.
I'm at this time.
Jesse Hall. Jesse Hall at 35 again.
Yeah. I'm at the tryout. And of course, a lot of Chicago guys came up because Rockford is,
right,
I think, a 2-hour drive from Chicago.
Quite.
So, dude, me and my boy, we sitting on the sideline, and this one cat, he's about 6'3". He stood under the backboard, under the goal, held the ball like at his waist with his palm up and the ball in his hand, jumped, did a 540, and dunked it behind his back.
Whoa.
And me and my boy was like, damn.
Wow.
And he's like, I wanted to do it again. So he turned around with his left hand and did it the other way.
I'm going to have to pack my bags immediately.
That's the kind of talent that was at that trial. But, you know, some of these cats, dude, they was just so hard-headed. They were so hard to talk to. They just thought they was the world. So I could see that some agents wouldn't want to deal with them. So a lot of those guys went overseas. A lot of those guys just turned out to be nothing. But, dude, it was a humbling experience. I was proud that I made it to the third.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to be proud of.
They was cutting every day. They was cutting every day. So I made it. I made it through Friday. I made it through Saturday.
Oh, that's great right there. That's good. Yeah. Before we go any further, once again, I'm going to give a shout out to my sponsor, Too Much Sauce St. Louis.
Too Much Sauce St. Louis.
249
Sher Hill.
249 Del Mar, Missouri, 6108. 314-448-6260. Getting back to what we were just talking about, because this one thing that we want to do, that I do always want to stress and focus on the Learn Something podcast, is whenever we have a chance to discuss real issues, especially amongst Black men, we drop everything and get on that topic. The topic that we were just speaking about, it also speaks to something that I was just speaking to your nephew about 2 hours ago. He was actually about to go on a bike ride. With my High Off the Glass family, big Older Gray. Shout out to the Older Gray and High Off the Glass family.
Older Gray, High Off the Glass.
But Mark was over there.
Pay the boss.
Mark was over there and about to go on a bike ride with him. So he's got and the way I am, when I get around any kids or youth, I'm automatically just start coaching or teaching. So speaking to him about we were actually talking about braids and dreadlocks, because he got a little fro and he was saying he didn't know what to do with it. So I'm like, man, braid it up or let it lock up. And he's like, he didn't know how to do that, blah blah blah. And I was telling him some different things, but and I was also telling him it's a way to develop patience as far as growing dreadlocks. And I'm like, you know, that's one thing.
Yeah, that's
you know what I'm saying? I was telling them that's one thing as a young man, the quicker and the sooner you develop a higher level of patience, the easier life will be for you. Because, you know, that's one thing that we don't understand a lot as young men is having patience, having the need to be patient. You know what I'm saying?
Especially young Black
men. Because we're so used to this quick, fast society. But the more you become patient and understand that things are not just going to come right to you, you have to like we were talking about Daryl, put grinding like that, or when we were talking about you and your past history as far as becoming instrumentalist to an artist, but just being that whole process of being patient through that process of making your first album, and then the progress of where you were at coming from your first album, that feeling of wow, you know what, it's a major accomplishment to myself, because I always wanted to do an album, and that feeling of knowing
completion,
you know what I'm saying, that you completed it. That's got to be a great feeling, no matter, because it makes you, I know it probably made you feel like, you know what, man, I don't give a fuck if this sells one copy or 20 million. I made an album. You know what I'm saying?
This is, I completed this process, and I know
what I'm saying. And it's like what I've noticed over the last few years of myself that you've seen me chronicle online or whatever. When you knock off things that are on your bucket list, God, that's a great feeling. Man, it's like,
You know what, and we're about to hit 50, so I think it's about time that we start, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to set up my bucket list for real and start attaining it. I do know that as far as both of us being avid sports fans, I like all sports. I don't know if you do, but I like all sports. My goal, my as far as sports is concerned, my bucket list for sports is to attend the Super Bowl. I want to attend the NBA Finals, and I want to attend the Olympics. So I've already done the NBA final because I was at game four of the Golden State Warriors versus Cleveland. We got ran that game. I thought that this would have been Cleveland, Golden State going 16-0. Only team to do that. But LeBron and Kyrie put up 86 in the first
half. You beat me to a final game. Fuck.
Yeah, man. I was at that game, dude. I was upset, too, because them cats put up 86 points in the first half.
Man.
Can you get that? The first half.
I remember that game, man. Like 63. I remember that game. You think?
Hey, man. Yes, I've been to an NBA. I want to go to the Super Bowl. I want to
go.
Oh,
that was already on my plan, but this I already had that mapped out. I had somewhere. I had somewhere to stay.
What?
Staying to live in Tampa.
Wow. That's right. Yeah, I got a friend that just moved down. He's been down there about a year, but I got a friend in Tampa also. But he said he might be working. But I want
to
go.
I've already been crossing things off my bucket list here and there. See, but like you said, I had planned since it's the 50th anniversary of our birth. I had planned on the Super Bowl also, but I was also planning on the Final Four because the Final Four is in Indianapolis.
That's the third one I meant. The Final Four, and not with the Final Four.
With the Final Four being in Indianapolis, my plan was like this. I don't have to worry about spending the night. I can go to Final Four Saturday and drive back home. It's 2.5 hours, 3 hours.
Yeah, it's only three hours.
We don't have to worry about getting no room. Just ticket.
Yeah.
And I was going to break the bank for that ticket. I was like, man, I don't care. This is the Final Four.
It's Final Four. I ain't got to stay.
You know what I'm saying? I've already driven through the tunnel from Detroit to Toronto. That was on my bucket list. Now, one of my all time dreams was since, as you know, I was a former travel agent. I wanted to drive up I-95 from Miami all the way up the Eastern Seaboard because I-95 hits all the major cities except Charlotte. Just have to get off and go a little bit over, a couple hours over to Charlotte. But I-95 takes you from Miami all the way up the Eastern Seaboard to Boston. So.
Man. Okay. I wanted to do the West Coast.
That was the other one, the PCA.
I see.
That was the other one.
Yeah, okay.
I'll go get to that one in a second. I got a chance to do this one a little bit when Cher was working in D.C., we drove from D.C. To Baltimore, and then Baltimore to D.C. We drove from basically D.C. to Philly, and we took the Cheesesteak Challenge. And ironically, when you drive to Philly, you have to cross over to New Jersey. And then
to Jersey, yeah, I know. I remember I used to live in Jersey. I used to live in Jersey. Yeah, you remember? He's in Paterson, New Jersey. Yolanda. Yolanda's family was from Detroit and stayed in East Orange. So when we were breaking up, she wanted to go back home. So I was like, you know what? I'll give this one last try. But it was so short, dude. I was only there for like 2 months. But yeah.
I'm seeing the movie, 2000.
Yeah, that's
right.
It was a movie. It
sure was. That's what I'm saying. You just lived a real life hurricane.
Yeah. Dude, we were because I drove a Ryder truck to New Jersey. Of course, this is after we had found a place and everything. So when we came back here to get our stuff, it was a Ryder truck. And I was in Trenton getting ready to go through Philly, and I stopped at a Wendy's. Is at night, and you know how you gotta. I'm in a riding truck. I wasn't even thinking about the height of the truck. And you know, you go through the drive thru, and it tells you how high your truck is. Dude, so I'm in I ordered the food. Then all of a sudden, I hear this.
Oh, no.
What the hell was What the hell was that? And then I thought about it. I was like, man, I just rolled through the sign. So I just said, forget the meal and just went straight to the highway. And we got on the highway and then the sign fell off on the highway.
Oh, wow. Damn, so you destroyed the... Wow.
I destroyed the Wendy's. It's a Wendy's in Trenton somewhere.
Looking for you.
They wanted to know who destroyed their sign. I'm the cat.
Now,
but the statute of limitations is now, gone, so.
Now, with you being from St. Louis, tell me how this affected you. I'm gonna see if it affected you the same way it affected me. Now, like I said, we were driving to Philly. We're on the New Jersey side, so I see. I got to get some gas. So I go to this gas station, and this guy starts walking out to me. I'm like, man, what the hell is he doing? So I leave. So we go down to the street to Wawa. You remember that gas station? I don't know if they had. It's like QT.
Wow.
It's like QT. So we go to a Wawa, and somebody else start walking to the car. So I'm like, what the hell is going on? So then they tell us, oh yeah, we're the whole state is a full service gas station state. So I'm like, oh. So they're like, yeah. So we told them what happened at the other gas station. They was like, yeah, that guy probably owned that gas station. So we was like, hold up, no, don't worry about it. We went back down the street to that guy and got gas from him. Now, was it? Did you experience?
No, I didn't. Yolanda already knew that, so it was kind of because with her being from the East Coast,
man, I was really
kind of beat
this guy's ass.
And not only that, man,
I'm like, man, what the hell is he doing?
I can see how you
trying to get some gas. The dude is walking out here. I'm like, first I'm thinking he's bagging. I'm like, man, what the fuck? No. But yeah, that was a trip.
I can see you now.
Like, yeah, because I'm like, man, I don't bother nobody. What the fuck you doing? But it was
But she knew that. And another thing that they do on the East Coast, they have, it's so before the, and you can tell by how this country is built, how everything was kind of positioned on the East Coast, and then everybody migrated into the rest of the country because it's for the area. You have a densely populated people, so you have a lot of people that do all kind of odd jobs. So. In our state, we have the highway patrol. Then we have the what's the other people that drive those trucks that will come and see if you have a flat tire. Roadside assistance. And the East Coast, they got regular cats to do that. Because when we drove the purple, remember the purple escort? When we drove that up to New Jersey, because we didn't attach it to the rider, we came back to get it. When we were driving that up, we hit a flat. And some dude came out of nowhere. It's like, yeah, I'm not lying. Some dude came out of nowhere. He had patching material. He had a pump. All of it. Yep. Gave me. Said, just give me 20. He's in Jamaica. Now, just give me $25. Gave me $25.
Is that the longest road trip that you've ever been on?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And it was made longer because of Yolanda, dumbass. And I hate to say this, but. I drove all the way from St. Louis up to, and this is how I know how Philadelphia and Trenton, New Jersey is, the turnpike's up there, because when I got to the Philadelphia area, we was 2 hours from New York, and I told her, because I was tired, I drove the whole way from St. Louis, you know, that's like 19 hours right there, just a little longer, because the whole trip took us 19 hours from here to New Jersey. Well, it was actually 20. It actually took a whole day because of this. But I got to Philadelphia because we went through the mountains. It was during the winter. So, you know, up in the mountains, it was raining and snowing. I'm sure that had a lot to do with our drive time. So, anyway, I drove that whole way. All the way through Ohio, all the way through Pennsylvania.
Those two states alone.
And I told her.
Ohio is long as fuck.
That's worse than driving through Kansas.
Damn, Ohio is a long state. Man.
Ooh, I hated Ohio, dog. I was like, I'm still here. I'm still in this month.
That's like Texas.
I'm
in this Arkansas,
long
too.
Long state. I wouldn't even want to drive to
Arkansas,
Texas.
Arkansas
I don't want to drive to Texas. That's, Louisiana to El Paso.
Oh, wow. It's like back road heaven.
That's a long
damn, Louisiana to El Paso, you drove that? Oh, I'm about to say, because I remember used to live in Dallas. I used to live in Dallas. I'm like, damn, you had to drive that? I do a lot of driving, but damn.
No. But no, I wouldn't try that. But anyway, dog, getting back to the story. So I told her, we pulled off, got some gas in Philadelphia. And I told her, when we get to Trenton, New Jersey, take I-20, and that'll run us right into East Orange. And then I went, take a nap. She woke me up 2 hours later, dog. We were down past Princeton, New Jersey. And I was like, what the fuck you do? And she's like, I took I-20 like you told me. I was like, no, I said take I-20 when you get past Trenton, New Jersey. She took the next
I-20. Oh, no.
I was
you're probably looking
so
like James
mad,
Evans.
Dude. I was angry. I look like any old school dad from any sitcom. I look like that dude.
Princeton?
She just took an I-20, dog, and just and was going south. We was all the
way halfway to state.
Like, what the, dude? <I know. laughs> We had to. It's funny now, dog, but when that happened,
yeah, that's
I
like
was
angry. Last year in Canada, right with my boy Teron, in the middle of the night, damn near about to run out of gas at 3:00 in the morning.
Jackson,
he's a coworker, man. We rolled from Pat in Detroit. We went to go to see Pat in Detroit, and they had a back to back at home, Detroit and Toronto. So, Toronto had back to back games, and so we stayed the night and the game the next night in Toronto. So we leaving the game that following night, trying to get gas. The guy was like, we're doing the shift change. So he was like, all right, we'll just go to the next gas station. No next gas station. And we run out of gas. So, and it's like, me and this dude, we steadily smoking. I'm trying to tell him, I'm like, dude, will you please try to find a 24-hour gas station so we can get some gas? He
you
we were in Toronto.
I'm in Canada.
So he finds this gas station, and it says, now listen to this. It says it's 5 miles off the highway. Now, we bought a ticket road trip, so I'm thinking to myself, like, why would a 24-hour gas station be 5 miles off the highway? I mean, don't do this. Don't do it.
Right.
Drove anyway. Go to this gas station. It had been deserted for years. It wasn't just closed down for that night, man. That man, it hadn't been open for years, man. I was a kid. Dog. The gas tank, I watched the gas tank go down from 59 to 7. I told dude, I'm like, man, we probably gonna have to pull over and wait till daytime. And we was right. We actually were right by the junction where the two highways meet up, where it was like all gas stations. We was like 2 miles away from it. Matter of fact, you ever heard of that show called Ice Road Truckers? It's like some show in Canada. It's like the worst highway in Canada. We actually were on the highway that runs parallel with that highway. They have no lights. They have reflectors.
Dang, no lights on the highway at all.
They depend on the lights from all the traffic. Yeah.
Shoot.
I really appreciate you coming through today and us having this wonderful show. It's funny how time flies when you just.
I'm just looking at it. It's been a whole.
That's how it is on the Learn Something podcast. We are family. We still be cousins, we're brothers, we friends for life. And this man has helped me out so much in my life, just inadvertently and in person. And I love this man so much. and that's one. I just want the world to know that. And like I said before, like I said before on the Learn Something podcast, whenever we get a chance to discuss real issues, we always will do that. And when you get a chance to hear different black men, different perspectives about different things, today we actually got a chance to learn more about the music industry and just music, period, from someone who's totally engrossed in the music industry, and music is this man's life.
I appreciate you. I know this for a fact.
Music is this man's life. And if you don't understand what that means,
you're
talking about people who like to read liner credits. Understanding how to put a song together, how to understand different sounds and different instruments. People who really appreciate music. I thought I appreciated music, and I do, but this man truly appreciates and understands music, and I admire that.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
I love you, man.
Thank you for that, cuz. Love you, cuz.
We're going to make sure we do this again on a...
All right, coach. Oh, definitely.
Anyone else out there, remember,
definitely
learn something, and we can discuss anything you want. Hit me up on all my social media tags. Before we go, also, drop your social media tags for anyone out here who wants to get in contact with you, or the best way to find you.
Yeah. IG is Rodney Michael Music, and my Twitter is Rodney Michael 06. Facebook is Rodney Jackson.
The names of your names of your albums.
Yeah, More is my first album, and the second one is Dichotomy. That came out last. More came out in 2012. Well, I'm sorry, 2013.
And
Dichotomy came out last year. A year ago. They can be purchased on iTunes, Google Music. You go to any major streaming service and search for Rodney Michael, and you will get my music.
Any particular song word, that Rodney stands Michael. Out in your head that you want people to really listen to or get into?
Wow, the whole album. I've been hearing the whole album is really nice, and it's a good listen. But for both of them, but for my first, the first album, More, is the More and God of Wonders. Those are my favorite two songs. And on Dichotomy, my favorite two are Dichotomy and Everything. So, yeah, but listen to the whole song. I actually, that second album is just really dope. It's got my baby cousin, which is not my baby cousin, but your little sister.
What's the name of that song?
That's a dope song.
I know you will.
I know you will.
Oh,
so I love that one.
I need to make sure I listen to
Michelle's
that.
Michelle's on that one. Yeah, Michelle's on that one. And Everything, your little brother gave me the words.
So now,
I got some ghostwriters too. I keep it in the family.
Just to let people know before we go quickly, inspirational, soul, how would you classify that?
It's a step and everyone knows who Kirk Franklin is, and Kirk Franklin is sort of like the radical Christian music. I'm not radical like that. I kind of deliver the message discreetly. I'm not pushing a lot of gospel into my lyrics or my words. Excuse me. So I would say it's a R&B inspirational genre of music. So if you like jazz, if you like R&B, and if you like some pop, you will definitely like either one of the albums that I have.
Yeah, we got a chance to get that out. Let the people know exactly where we're coming from.
Sure.
We're moving forward. You know, we're trying to make great music, great music for the people, just trying to make sure we live our lives creatively and to the best of our abilities. You know, not taking any more shorts anymore. And
yes, sir.
Once again, Learn Something Podcast, episode 5. Thanks again for coming through, cuz. Love you, and all right now.
Yeah, love you too, man. All right, coach.